Say Adams' career parallels the rise of hip-hop and rap culture over the past 30 years. He was a graffiti artist in New York. He became part of the underground art scene with Jean-Michel Basquiat and Keith Haring. Say Adams really made his name, though, as a hip-hop graphic designer, working with Def Jam Records on logos and ads for the Beastie Boys, Run DMC, and even Eminem. Now he works with corporate clients like Nike, Coca-Cola, and HBO. Say Adams is a young-looking 52. He was in Seattle for the Seattle Interactive Conference and to speak with young people about career opportunities behind the scenes in rap music, in social media, and graphic design. I caught up with Say Adams at the Experience Music Project, where he was the co-designer for their very first hip-hop exhibit back in 2003. Say Adams told me that he started out doing street graffiti art in New York City in the 1970s.
I kind of just caught the bug like a lot of people and just wanted to be a part of the, you know, graffiti community.
Now, mid-70s, a lot of people didn't think about it as art. They just thought of it as a mess.
Yeah, well, at that time, the art form really hadn't even grown up yet. Some of the early pioneers were, making what we now call graffiti art, but at the time it was primarily just, tagging and stuff like that. And, some of the subway stuff hadn't even really developed yet.
When you got started, did you consider it art? Were you thinking of it as an artist?
Well, you know what? I've always been an artist my whole life, even from, early on when I was in grade school. So I was always aware that I was an artist. I wasn't always sure if graffiti was art, but once I started to develop my craft and I saw what some of the other guys that I came up with were doing on subways, like, the full cars, that were beautifully painted, that was when I realized it was definitely an art form.
Well, you kind of were there at the beginning. Were there earlier inspirations that got you wanting to do graffiti?
You know what? All of my inspirations come from the same place. It's comic book art. I'm a student of the pop era, so I grew up with Lichtenstein and Warhol and Jasper Johns and those guys. So those were the people that inspired me. And that was the thing that really made me want to become an artist. Not so much a graffiti artist, but a traditional artist.
And if I'm reading your biography correctly, it seems as though part of your next step was kind of getting involved in the downtown art scene with Basquiat and Keith Haring.
Yeah, well, it was a natural transition because, growing up doing graffiti, you can only do that for so long. And, the lifespan of a graffiti artist is really short, especially if you get, caught. And, I was young. I didn't want to get in trouble with my parents, and I didn't want them on my case. So I knew I kind of had to transition out of it at some point. And so around that time, you had a lot of people trying to make the transition into fine art because there were all these East Village art galleries that were taking a chance on us. So for me, it didn't seem like a big stretch to try to make the leap to, making paintings. And, at that point, I'm, 19 or 20. I have to do something to really, like I said, keep my parents off my back. So I thought if there was some way for me to make quote-unquote professional art, was a win-win. I never thought of it as a problem. Some people didn't like the idea of, graffiti, being, applied to canvas. They thought it was selling out. Some people thought it wasn't, as pure. And, I agree that it may not be as pure, but, for me, I always just thought about it, as it relates to doing something that I love to do and earning a living. I didn't think about worrying about what my peers thought.
So what about your parents? You said they were kind of on your back in the early days. Is there some moment where they stepped back and said, hey, say, something's really, you got it?
Well, you know what? I think my parents saw that it clicked when they saw me in the paper, when they saw that I was making a few bucks and I was staying out of trouble, really. I mean, that was the thing. All of a sudden I'm, on NPR and I'm, doing little television spots. I'm on the news and I'm in the Daily News and the New York Times. There's no more legitimate way to earn a living than that. So I think that was the turning point for them. But, that was, when I was in my early 20s. They had to live, through all the stuff I did in my teen years before I got to that point. So,
were you a bad boy?
No, not really. You know what? I was very fortunate. I never got caught writing graffiti. I was never like into the vandalism aspect because I was always an artist. So making the transition was something that I was looking forward to. I just didn't know it was going to happen.
What did your acceptance in those downtown art circles mean to you personally and to your art?
You know what? I think that for me, in a lot of ways, it was validation because I always knew that what we were doing was important. But, getting that stamp of approval from people that you admire is a big deal. Meeting Andy Warhol and meeting Roy Lichtenstein and sitting down and having a conversation about art one-on-one as artists is a big deal. And I think that ideally that was one of the things that told me that I could do this. And it was only a matter of time before I had the confidence to believe in myself and really perfect my craft in a way that was different from what I was doing when I was painting on subways.
Would this kind of art, do you think, have ever gotten the acceptance that it has if it weren't for hip-hop and rap kind of rising up in music culture at the same time?
You know what? Probably not. I think that as a collective, they do help to support each other. Granted, I still believe that the music component gets more attention than dance and DJing and graffiti and aerosol art. But, I'll take what I can get. And I think that one of the good things that's happened over the years is, Jean-Michel and Keith Haring got accepted. And then years later, Shepard Fairey's campaign for the Obama administration really helped to show people that, this is not just outlaw art. We are legitimate artists that have formal training in some cases, and the work that we're doing is important. I mean, granted, it helped to get the President of the United States elected. That was a major movement, and it was a great turning point because you would have never imagined Ronald Reagan or Jimmy Carter or, George W. supporting art in such a public way. Obama really went out of his way to acknowledge it, and it really validated what we were doing.
I'm always interested in the relationship between visual art and music, and there's a saying, it goes something like, among music journalists, it's something like, writing about music is like doing architecture about dance. And the idea here is that it's taking one art form to represent another, and it's really hard and complicated to do that. And I'm wondering, it sounds as though a lot of your work kind of at least was inspired by music. And how do you make that jump from something that's you hear in your ears to something you see in your eyes?
Oh, definitely. I've always been influenced by music, whether I was making work or not. But, music is one of those things that everybody connects with. I can close my eyes and just vibe out on anything from, Jimi Hendrix to Bob Marley to, the Beatles or the Doors. And it really helps to sort of contextualize the work that we're doing. And it also, helps to frame it in a specific time period. And, when I think back to when I first started making work and, some of my rock friends were like listening to Led Zeppelin and, The Who and bands like that. And, it wasn't the kind of thing they thought, oh, well, you're just into hip-hop, because hip-hop didn't even have a name then. So, all of my friends were listening to, R&B or, kind of coming out of disco and things like that, a lot of dance music. So the idea that art and music, they really do go hand in hand all the time. I mean, it was one of the things that really helped me when I started to make the transition to a graphic designer. I had to sort of convince Russell Simmons and Rick Rubin that what I was doing was the way to go, because when they first started out, they had the traditional art directors up at CBS and Sony designing some of the early records, and they just didn't have a feel for the music. They didn't identify with the artist, and they knew that I did, and so it didn't take long for them to figure out that I should be designing those records, not some older man or woman that doesn't live the culture.
Well, how about the creative people, Russell Simmons, and when you worked at first with the Beastie Boys, did you have to kind of show them that what you could do visually connected to their art in some way? Was it hard to do that?
Not really. The thing that was tricky was not so much convincing them that I could do a good job from a visual perspective. It was more getting them to understand that I could work with a budget and I could hire photographers and illustrators and go on location and work with location scouts. So that aspect of my design career was something that I had to learn, because in addition to making the visual work, you also had to run a business. And that was something that a lot of people didn't understand. And I learned trial by fire, because in order to make the covers, you had to control every aspect of how they were done. I had to work with vendors and printers and then later on hire designers when we got so busy. And that was something that took a little bit of convincing in the beginning. But for the most part, as long as I showed them that I could do that and keep a creative edge, it wasn't a problem.
The show business, then there's business. And you have kind of gone from working primarily with show business to big companies, to Nike, to Coca-Cola. Was that kind of a leap for you?
You know what? By the time the transition started to happen, it really wasn't. It was a long time coming for those big corporate brands to understand that we know our audience better than they do. And I reference the folks at Adidas whenever I talk about this, because once upon a time, they didn't believe that we knew who our core audience was and that we knew how to communicate with them. So once I got an opportunity to start designing for a lot of the corporate brands, some of the younger executives realized that it was a community. And, you know, whether it was, you know, dance or art or DJing or emceeing, we had a way of connecting with the younger generation. And that was something that an older ad exec could not do. And if they wanted their products to really be on message, hiring somebody that really lives the culture is the way to go. And I think it took Madison Avenue a little while to figure that out. But once they did, I think it, you know, they really made a direct connection to the people that they were trying to target.
And I wonder if, like, through the course of your career, back from doing graffiti onto working with rap artists, onto the corporate clients you're working with, it sounds as though your credibility and the willingness of people to trust you built from one phase to the other. You achieved legitimacy in one, and that helped you leverage you to the next.
Well, also, you know, a couple of things happened. One, as, you know, when I started out writing graffiti, I was really young. So by the time I started doing graphic design and really running my own design firm, I was, you know, in my 20s. I mean, I guess that's still considered really young, but I mastered my craft and I knew how to run a small business. So by the time I got an opportunity to, let's say, work on something like EMP and design, you know, or to help design the hip-hop wing of this museum, it was something that I was ready for. And I knew how to articulate what I wanted if I was talking to an architect. You know, for the most part, it's just a matter of showing them sketches and then they help you figure out how to configure what it is you're trying to do, you know, whether it's, you know, scale or, you know, color, size, what have you. So it's really just trial and error, but I think it all kind of begins with showing them that you are more than capable of giving the opportunity.
Which of your many creative efforts are you personally most happy with in terms of something that you created?
You know what? For me, I think it's about the evolution. When I look back on my career, I never really have one moment that I'm most proud of. For me, it's about the relationships that I've built. It's, you know, being friends with Rick and Russell and the Beastie Boys and Run DMC for over 30 years. It's still being able to, you know, call up Chuck D from Public Enemy and, you know, talk about design as it relates to, you know, whatever the projects that he's working on with his band. It's things like that. It's the journey, because, you know, after a while, you know, I've had so many great opportunities to do everything that I could have imagined as it relates to art and design, you know, even publishing books. and you know, doing lectures and you know, speaking to you know, on a university level to you know, interested students and things like that. So for me, it's really about the full journey and just being able to show people that you can come from, you know, these humble beginnings and really work with, you know, major corporations and brands and really express yourself in a creative way.
You know, I'm sure when you started out, it was just something that gave you satisfaction to do graffiti. And now these many years later, with the various successes that you've had, is there still some of your artwork that is just for you, that you don't do for businesses, that you do just for yourself?
I started painting again after a bunch of years. And making personal art is always something that's really special because you don't have a client telling you it needs to be one way or another or some middleman, you know, trying to tell you that they know how to communicate your idea better than you do. So getting an opportunity to do, some of my little paintings is really special. And so, you know, if any of your listeners go to my website, they'll see some of the stuff that I'm talking about. But for the most part, I just feel like I represent hope and possibility. So when young people are coming up now and they think that, you know, they might want to be a graphic designer or they might want to, you know, do some other visual area or focus on architecture or whatever it is, illustration. I mean, it doesn't have to be any one thing. And just to let them know that it doesn't matter where you come into the craft, as long as you perfect it and you're serious about the work you're doing, I think the opportunities will follow.
You know, maybe for our website, we will go to your website and pull one of your personal works of art. And maybe you could describe one of them to me and I'll go look for it. We'll find it and how it kind of connects to your entire history as an artist.
Well, you know, the thing about my work is that I feel like even if it doesn't look like it, everything is connected to my history as it relates to hip-hop because, you know, I came up during that era and all of the work that I do in some way, shape, or form is always connected, you know, whether you can see it or not, just because I'm first generation and that's always in my blood and I'm very concerned about making that connection with young people, so I always remind them that I started out as a graffiti artist, and I'm really proud of that, and I want them to know that that's nothing to be ashamed of. Not that they're thinking that now. I mean, you know, graffiti is very popular, so I think a lot of young people understand that it's a good starting point. And for me, that was something that, has really helped me to establish who I am as a creative adult.
Is there a piece on your website that kind of connects to your roots in a good way that you could tell me about?
There's a couple. You know, primarily the stuff that I'm really proud of is I designed a poster for the Museum of Modern Art. And it's sort of, incorporates all of the basic elements of hip-hop. You know, graffiti, breakdancing, bold color, powerful messages, some of the bands that I've worked with over the years. And just getting an opportunity to do something like that on a museum level is really kind of, you know, just the pinnacle of showing that, you know, we're here and we made it because there was a time when museums didn't want to have anything to do with us. And here we are all these years later getting major acceptance from major museums. And, you know, there's no other way to measure success in America but to work with the biggest and the brightest.
You know, you talked about yourself being once one of the young Turks, the new generation coming in. At this point in your career, are you kind of looking behind you going, oh, there's some young Turks coming up on me?
Oh, all the time, you know. But one of the things that I've learned is the best way to move forward is to embrace youth and technology. And so I make it a point of always staying abreast of what younger artists are doing and speaking, like I said, on a high school level, college level, even grade school, just to kind of remind them of who we are and where we come from, but also to let them know that I am watching and paying attention to what they do. So they inspire me in a lot of ways just by being excited and learning about the past and knowing that I can stand in front of them as a firsthand example of what that journey looks like. Even if I don't look like I've been around that long, I remind them that I really was there in the very beginning.
Yeah, how old are you anyway?
52.
All right, I'm fooled. But do you ever go, man, what I do and what I've stood for is all of a sudden moving into the past? I mean, do you ever feel as though I got to jump forward at some point?
No.
Does anything make you feel like you're 52?
No, you know what? I feel like I'm an ambassador for the culture, and I'm happy to be standing here because I know a lot of my friends no longer are around. And so when I think about the journey, I constantly reference who we are and where we come from as a way of marking time because, you know, like a lot of the great rock and roll pioneers or, you know, artistic pioneers, they're not all around anymore. So whenever you can talk to somebody that was there and saw it firsthand, it's a reminder that these things really did happen. You know, because, you know, let's face it, like, you know, time goes on. You know, I've been in rooms where, you know, kids don't know who Run DMC is or Jean-Michel Basquiat. And so, you know, but they know who I am. And I was like, those guys are, you know, the gatekeepers. Those are the people that really open the doors for everybody that's making this work today. You know, the Adam Yauchs of the world, and just reminding them that, you know, we were here, and this is still a young art form. I mean, compared to rock and roll, you know, or the blues or jazz or something like that. You know, we're youngsters. Hip hop is only 40 years old. So to have somebody standing in front of you that says, I was there before it had a name, is a big deal. You know, it's like, you know, you remember before rock and roll had a name, you know? It was just music that your folks didn't want you to listen to. That was the same thing with hip-hop. My mother used to call it like that boom, boom, boom music, you know?
Did they ever get an appreciation of it, or is it still boom, boom, boom music to them?
Oh, sure. I think they did. I think, you know, the great thing about modern technology is that people can see that now hip-hop is a global phenomenon, and it's touched people all over the world. And that's a big deal when you consider, you know, it was this little tiny thing that started out, you know, in New York City, and now you can go to any point in, you know, in the world and see some form of visual art that relates back to that period, some form of DJ culture, breakdancing, or, you know, rapping or MCing. And that's a big deal. I mean, how many movements can you think of that you can, you know, really trace, you know, the history of it, and then also recognize, you know, the global impact of what it's accomplished?
It's just amazing to travel in Asia or in Africa or anywhere, and they all have their own form of hip-hop.
Yeah.
And they all have their own form of rap.
Yeah, they might not know everybody, but they certainly know the movement, and that's what's really important to me. You know, I don't get hung up on who's better, who came first, who came second. Just the idea that they're making work and they're excited about it is really all it is. Because, you know, to me, hip-hop is youth culture. It doesn't matter when you get in, as long as you get in. And I tell people all the time, it's like a timeline. You get on the timeline or the treadmill, wherever you get on, and the minute you get on, you're contributing to the history of the culture.
You work hard to establish yourself as an artist, as a graphic artist, as someone who can work with businesses. What's kind of at the top of your list now? What's the next challenge that you kind of have underway?
The thing I put a lot of energy into now is education, because I think that passing the message along to younger kids that don't have hope or don't know that, you know, there are job opportunities behind the scenes in the business of hip-hop and entertainment is something that I want to remind them, because now television sort of glorifies what we do, and they see Jay-Z on television and they see Kanye West, and all of these folks are established now. But, you know, I want to remind them that most of the people in hip-hop came from nothing, really humble beginnings. And I want to remind them that, you know, that's something that they can take to heart and know that they can do the same thing if they just apply themselves. And so whenever I'm doing work in the inner cities, I have to really stress that, because, you know, some of those kids don't, you know, see the positives and how beneficial, you know, some of these opportunities can be for them. And so I really try to work hard to do that. And that's really all I have is to be able to share those stories with people so they, you know, are reminded that they can do it too.
Say Adams, a graphic artist and businessman who got his start doing graffiti art in the streets of New York, went on to help Def Jam Records create a visual identity for the Beastie Boys and other musicians. These days, Say Adams runs a business in graphic arts, working with corporate clients like Nike, Coca-Cola, and HBO.